Species unite.
Fashion is a really easy way to get in because it doesn't really involve any sacrifice, does it? I think for a lot of people, the thought of going vegan food-wise just seems like a really big deal. Whereas buying a vegan handbag, you know, you get to buy a beautiful handbag and it's vegan.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. For the month of October, we are doing the Species Unite Vegan Challenge, and we think that you should do it with us. So go to our website, speciesunite.com, and sign up for it. It's fun, delicious, and really easy. For 30 days, you'll receive a small dose of plant-based magic in your inbox. And we also have some spectacular prizes from Era New York Luxury Footwear and from Mia Mojo Luxury Vegan Handbags. If 30 days feels like it's too much for you, then just do the first 10. This conversation is with Anik Ireland. Anik is a co-founder and CEO of Immaculate Vegan, an online vegan marketplace that is changing the world for animal lovers who also love fashion.
Hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Really good. How are you?
Nice to meet you finally as well.
It's really cool to meet you because I have been following you and following Immaculate Vegan, I think, since you very first started. So for people who don't know and haven't heard of Immaculate Vegan, will you just explain like what it is?
We're essentially a marketplace for the very best vegan, ethical, and sustainable fashion in the world. So that's how, kind of how we bill ourselves. I guess the words ethical and sustainable are quite important as well because we're not just about beautiful vegan fashion, but it's really important to us that all of the products that we take on are made ethically. So ethical labor is really important, but also sustainable materials is really important as well. We have about 100 brands at the moment, and we're growing that all the time. We've got about 4,000 products, lots and lots of stuff for women, but we're really growing men's, and we hope to very soon launch Immaculate Kids as well.
When I went vegan, which was like 8 or 9 years ago, I'd been vegetarian since I was a kid and I wasn't vegan. And then all of a sudden I had this moment like, oh my God, why am I not vegan? Like, how am I not vegan? And so it was kind of like in this crazy flash that I went vegan in like 10 seconds.
Oh, wow.
That day I was like, I have to get rid of every piece of leather, suede, any animal product I own. And I gave tons away. I shipped boxes to a friend who loved all my stuff. I got rid of all my leather, suede, anything that was made out of animals.
You just didn't like the idea of having it around.
I think because when it hit me that like, wait, you're not vegan. I'd always been an animal lover. I'd been vegetarian since I was 13. And it just hit me like, how stupid are you that you're not vegan, right? And so it was kind of like just this moment. And like, so I reacted, like really overreacted. And I was left with some running shoes and something, nothing. And then I was like, it didn't even occur to me like how hard it was going to be. And I love clothes and I love shoes and I love bags and I'm not a, like, it, I do. I think they're, you know, they're great. And I went to find some vegan boots. You know, I did the search. And at the time, especially in the US, it was so bleak. I mean, they look like plastic boots. Like,
yeah.
But that was like my first pair of vegan shoes. And I was like, and then I had to really learn. And it took so long to be able to find some shoes that I really liked. Mostly they were in the EU or the UK. So when you came along, you know, it really changed the game. I was stunned at how hard it was back then, especially.
Yeah.
So is that why and how you started?
I mean, that's exactly it. You really, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. I went vegan around about the same time. And probably like you, I found the food side of it actually pretty easy, you know, especially if you live in a big city, right? There's plenty of options. But when I started just, you know, typing in things like vegan bags, vegan shoes, you know, into Google, it was just like, oh no, what is this? I guess a couple of things. One, I was just sort of just a bit surprised at how little choice there was. But also, like you, just there was a lot of pleather, right? That sort of really plasticky PVC stuff, as well as just a lot of stuff that was very frumpy and practical and not nice looking in any kind of way. So I thought, oh, this is going to be really hard. And I just thought I'm going to spend time really trying to find out what's out there. So I spent a lot of time, you know, on the web, on Instagram, which is obviously the home of, you know, lots of fashion brands. And eventually, because you kind of end up going down that rabbit hole, right? I found that actually, and this is the good news, that there were lots of really beautiful boutique brands out there. A lot in Europe and the UK, by the way, definitely more than in the US, although the US situation is improving, but I would say it's still a bit behind, which is really frustrating.
Yeah.
But the bad news was that they were so hard to find. So really, I started Immaculate Vegan. I started it purely as an Instagram blog. I was working full time just to show people like me and you, essentially, who might have gone, oh, it's just too hard, I can't do it. That actually, no, you know, these brands, these products do exist. You don't have to spend, you know, months looking for them like I did. And the point of the Instagram blog was just really all about curating and sharing the very best that was out there. And it was really interesting that the sort of response, because I had, you know, individuals coming to me saying, I just had no idea this stuff was out there. How do I buy it? Where do I buy it from? But also the brands were contacting me saying they were really pleased because they felt there was no platform that was about premium fashion, but also vegan fashion that was out there. Because they didn't want to be associated with all that pleathery, nasty looking stuff, right? They were like, we're a really beautiful brand. We have amazing products. Where can we showcase them in a way that's really fitting and you know, suitable for us? So I was getting actually as much pressure from brands saying, you need to start something, as I was from sort of, you know, potential customers as well. So that's how it all started, really. So, you know, to cut a long story short, I left my job. I was a you know, marketing director. That had been my sort of career. I went freelance so that I could spend time kind of building this up as a proper, you know, business idea. I found an amazing co-founder who's also vegan, who's from a pure sort of e-commerce background. And then, you know, a year later, we launched Immaculate Vegan. So it all happened pretty quickly from there.
Even now in 2023, even though there are, and it sounds crazy because I know all the brands and it's easy to search for me. But even now, if you go to search like, oh, vegan boots, it's a lot of stuff you probably don't want comes up. Like, it's not like it's an easy search even now.
A search is dominated by the really big players, right? So what you often see is actually all the really big fast fashion houses who have got their kind of conscious collections out there, which is basically PVC stuff made in sweatshops, you know, with no ethical label whatsoever. And that's kind of what you see at the top of search quite often. I mean, hopefully now you see Immaculate Vegan more and more because we've worked really hard on that. But it's really hard still to find those smaller brands because they just don't have the marketing power or time to get up there where people are going to find them. So yeah, the good news is there's way more brands than ever now. I mean, I think there's so many brands, you know, we can't get them on quickly enough. But they're still hard for, I would say, the general sort of searcher to try and find.
And with the brands, like even since you started, it's grown like immensely, right?
Yeah, hugely. So we're probably going to double the brands in the next year. And there are just so many. I mean, There's a lot, I think, of new brands launching in Europe and actually more Europe and the UK probably, because traditionally there's quite a lot of, if you think of sort of luxury and premium, there's a lot of manufacturing in places like Portugal and Spain and Italy. We are seeing more US brands, particularly on the trainer side, which is great. I'd love to see more US vegan shoe brands because we have a lot of US customers and I know a lot of them are buying from those European and UK brands on our site, but it'd be lovely to give them more sort of homegrown local brands to come from and support, right? Especially because that's more sustainable as well.
Absolutely.
If anyone's listening and thinking of starting up a vegan shoe brand in the US, please do.
It's true. There's a few that I love and their shoes are made in Italy because no one's making any vegan leather like yet here, like in that sense.
And well, that's it. You know, the brands as well, also they have to find a factory that's really good at working with vegan leather and is also, you know, going to stick to their kind of high-end premium aesthetic. And they want to guarantee ethical labor. So it's actually not super easy. You know, these guys aren't outsourcing to, you know, cheap massive factories, you know, in Asia either. So they've got to find the right place and that's hard. But again, I think as more and more brands come on board, more factories will switch to using vegan leather as well, particularly those lovely premium ones like apple leather and cactus leather. And then it's just going to get easier and easier.
I think so. And the brands that are there now, I mean, they're brave. It's hard what they're doing. Like, it's so hard for them to get seen and it takes, there's just in finding factories, finding the right materials, all of that, I think they're serious pioneers.
Because they've got to be sort of product design experts, as well as manufacturing experts, as well as marketing experts. They've got to do everything. And, you know, they're still, I mean, the great news is that more and more people are really actively looking for vegan options, for more sustainable options. So that's brilliant. But, you know, you've still got a lot of people that are buying fast fashion, and you've got to educate people on why it's important, as well as just showing them how lovely the products are, right? They've always got to be doing those two things. They kind of got double the work of a lot of mainstream brands, and they're doing a brilliant job. Yeah. But they need all the support they can get, for sure.
Do you know, like, about your customer base in terms of, you know, I'm sure you don't know exactly, but have an idea. Is it vegan? Is it a mix?
It's a real mix, actually. It's quite surprising. So given the fact that we're quite small still, and we have very limited, you know, ad budgets. So we just target people that are the most, you know, the lowest hanging fruit for us, right? Because that's where we're best, you know, spending our money. So therefore, mainly vegans. But still about 25% of our audience is not vegan. That was, you know, through some online polls that we did. And a lot of people, you know, we hear through customer services, or, you know, who interact with us on social media, talk about not necessarily just the vegan aspects, but I think they really like the idea of, I think there's a few things actually. One is that a lot of people are just really put off by leather, even if they're not vegan. You know, they hear stuff about how it's contributing to, you know, deforestation of the Amazon, you know, horror stories about how cattle are treated for leather, horror stories actually about how tannery workers, you know, are treated. And, you know, they have, you know, average death rates in their 40s, all kinds of horrible things around the leather industry. So I think a lot of them are actually just really put off about that and are looking for leather alternatives. And I think then on the other side, you've got people that are hearing about these amazing new leathers that are quite sexy and exciting, right? Like cactus leather or apple leather and grape leather, which are made from, you know, waste products from the wine and apple juicing industry. And lots of kind of big brands are starting to experiment with those. And that seems very progressive and really exciting. So some people are, you know, who are really into fashion kind of like that aspect as well, which is brilliant for us, because we're just trying to get people in from all angles, right? Whether you really care about animal cruelty, whether you really care about sustainability, whether you just want the sort of the latest innovations in fashion, you can get it all. Yeah. and be cruelty free, which is lovely.
One thing I've found, so our poll, 60% of our audience is not vegan. And what I've noticed is there are people who are really getting interested in veganism through fashion,
yeah,
that are not touching the food yet.
Yeah.
But you know what? If they're wearing vegan shoes, like, that's such a big step. It's a step no one was taking 10 years ago or 5 years ago.
Completely. Right? I mean, if you think about it, fashion is a really easy way to get in, because it doesn't really involve any sacrifice, does it? I think for a lot of people, the thought of going vegan food-wise just seems like a really big deal. Whereas buying a vegan handbag, you know, you get to buy a beautiful handbag, and it's vegan. And now I think the whole idea of vegan fashion is becoming more, you know, it's being seen as progressive and exciting. So they get to kind of show it off to people. That just feels like a really easy and enjoyable thing to do, doesn't it? So yeah. I've got plenty of friends that aren't vegan who have bought from Immaculate Vegan, and they love talking about how they've got a bag made of cactus leather, or they've got some trainers made of apple leather.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, it sort of makes them feel really cool. So I think loads of people are definitely coming in from that angle that maybe we would never get otherwise.
I was at a dinner the other night with a vegan shoemaker, a vegan materials maker, and a vegan investor. And plastic was the conversation. And I said, look, for a decade almost, I've been walking around. And after my first fumbles, my vegan shoe collection is pretty good. I've been walking around in vegan shoes. And people ask me all the time, oh my God, I love your shoes. And I say, they're vegan. Oh my God, where'd you get them? It's the conversation. Right? With non-vegans. But not once in this time has anyone said how much plastic's in them, right? But if you ask the shoemaker or the materials maker, that's all they're concerned about.
Yeah.
Is no, we got to get this without plastic. We got to get rid of the plastic. And I know that from an environmental standpoint, but for compared to where we were and compared to what leather is, these guys are doing a pretty good job at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
How does that come up in your world?
We see this a lot, right? And I think it's being fought on a number of different angles. So one, I think, and I see this definitely a lot on social media, people from the leather industry, so people with like leather worker in their title, who will come on and sort of make lots of comments about it's just all plastic, it's terrible for the environment, leather's natural. And so I think a lot of it is being led by the leather industry trying to sort of demonize these vegan materials, basically, because they haven't they can't really make an argument in any other way. You know, I mean, in terms of CO2 emissions, water usage, animal cruelty, you know, how industry workers are treated, they haven't got a leg to stand on there. So the only place they can really go at is the plastic angle. But we also do get sort of real, you know, eco-warriors saying, you know, it's going to be full of plastic, there's nowhere I'd go near you. I understand their point more because I think theirs comes from, you know, genuine just not understanding, one, what actually some of the new latest materials are made of, but also understanding what the alternative is, you know, which is not only is leather bad on all those different fronts, it actually usually contains plastic as well.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, because that's how you keep, along with, you know, the 200 chemicals that are put into it, that's how it's durable and flexible. You know, an animal skin is going to rot really quickly. I think most people don't really think about that. They just think of, you know, the leather industry's had thousands of years to do their marketing campaign, right? They think of leather as natural, naturally durable. And in reality, you know, the only thing that's making it durable for thousands of years is those 200 chemicals, many of which are carcinogenic, and the plastic. So I think what we try and do is, I think one is that we try and explain to people that there is no perfect option. There's no such thing as perfection anywhere, right? What we're trying to do is pick the best option that's commercially available right now. We don't think that leather, for all those reasons we've talked about, let alone obviously the horrendous animal cruelty, is the best option. So we're going to take that out. You know, when we look at the alternatives, some of them have a lot of plastic, and we try and find brands that are using the very best cutting edge, plant-based and most sustainable vegan leathers out there. And the great news is now that there are many of them. They do almost all contain some level of plastic, but it's small and it's getting smaller and smaller by the day. So, and it's not always very clear from the manufacturers exactly how much plastic is in there. But, you know, certainly with the latest Apple leathers, it's around 15%. There's an amazing material now called Mirum. I saw that you interviewed Jerry Pringle, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, Vashon are doing amazing things in this area. You're working with a lot of brands on using Mirum, which is the first plastic-free, you know, entirely plastic-free vegan leather that's commercially available. The performance of these leathers is getting much better as well. So that's another thing I get quite a lot. It's almost that people go, one, it's full of plastic, but then also, oh, it's going to biodegrade and fall apart in a minute. It's like, which one do you want? Do you want it to last forever or do you want it to last for no time at all? But I've got plenty of vegan stuff that I wear all the time that's lasted really, really well.
Me too.
So, again, I think that's a myth. So we just try and basically get the information out there, try and debunk all of those myths, and just stay calm.
I think because we live in such like a fast, I want it here and now and it has to be perfect kind of world.
Yeah.
The one thing that I think the biggest misunderstanding or misconception people have is that this industry is just now being born, right? Like everything is an experiment and everything is getting better exponentially fast, but it just started.
And it has done so well considering the fact it's just starting, right? And considering, there's a lot of investment going into it now, but nothing compared to, you know, what other materials and what leathers had, you know, in the last many hundreds of years. So I think it's incredible the pace of innovation that's happening and actually how far along a lot of those manufacturers have come. But it's going to get better and better. I think that's the good thing. So it's important for us all to really support all the efforts that are being made now, even if they're not 100% perfect, because they are just going to get better if we all support them.
And they need to scale too. So last week, Apple came out and said, no more leather, we're ditching leather, which was huge, right?
Yeah.
But this has got to have an effect on everything.
I think it really helps on really big brands like that, you know, like Tesla, and you know, don't refuse to use any animal leather in the interior of their cars. Big brands basically saying we're rejecting this just sends a really good signal. I think one, it just makes it mainstream and normal to a lot of people, which is good, right? It's no longer this freakish weird thing. I think also people assume that if they're a big brand and they're saying this, that must mean that they're confident enough in the alternatives that are out there. Because they're not going to want to use rubbish materials. It's going to massively affect their product quality and their reputation. So I think it also really helps the reputation of the alternative materials that are out there, because I think people then think, oh, they must be at a decent standard, right? And therefore I can trust them as well. I mean, interestingly, we sell Apple Watch straps made of Apple leather on our site as well. And we've seen those kind of increase in popularity too. So I don't know what Apple's going to do, but it would make sense for them to use Apple leather, right? That would be a very nice.
It would be amazing. Yes.
Marketing tie-in.
people ask me this a lot too, so I'm going to throw it on you. Like a lot of really well-made and good quality materials for vegan shoes are expensive.
Yeah.
Which I get a lot of pushback on, and I'm sure you get a ton, right?
Along with plastic and leather, that's the second one we get the most about. And I think we sort of try and address that in two ways. So one is that, you know, we do want to be as accessible as we can be. And we do recognize that people have got different price points they can afford. And so we do try and cater for that on the website. So, you know, we've got bags from £80 to £1,400, for example. And, you know, and most are sort of at the 100 to 200. So we do try and have a range as much as we can so that, you know, different things are accessible for different people. But I think what we also try and do is, again, educate people about the cost of production, right? So these are not, it's not the fact that the brands or us are making, you know, millions through creaming off huge margins. In fact, it's the total opposite. Everyone's margins are tiny. Now, part of that is scale. You know, a lot of these brands are really, really small. So of course, you know, they're going to be more expensive. Again, the more people support them, the more they grow, the more they can scale, the more, you know, costs will be able to come down. But I think the other really important factor is around materials and ethical labor. And I think we've got so, you know, certainly as a culture, I think we've got so used to things being made very, very cheaply and not thinking about how are they so cheap. And that's because they're being made, you know, on the base of the exploitation of laborers who have got, you know, they're not even earning a, you know, let alone a living wage, but they're well down into, you know, poverty wage. And so as soon as you start to insist on things like having just a living wage for garment makers, that is a big portion of the cost of a product. Again, as soon as you say no PVC, you know, it has to be a, you know, relatively sustainable material or one of the more sustainable options, that automatically brings the cost up. So I think it's also about what you're willing to pay for to some extent. You know, we simply cannot find someone making vegan shoes using ethical labor and selling a pair of shoes for £30. It's just $50. It's just impossible because the producer would be making nothing. And that's not what we're about at all. You know, again, what we also try and say is we're not about constant trends and constantly buying stuff either, right? So it's all about try and buy the best you can afford and get some really classic pieces that will last you for a really, really long time so that you're not having to, you know, constantly try and buy all this stuff that's really expensive. Hopefully you can start to switch to buying fewer things, but they are going to be genuinely made better. They're going to last for longer and you'll feel really good knowing that the person who made them was actually, you know, treated fairly and paid equitably for the work they did too. So yeah, we try and do it on all those angles.
There's a lot of talk in the world right now about like, hey, we need to buy less, you know, buy one good thing instead of 10 cheap ones.
Definitely.
It feels like to me, I mean, just from watching it all, that like, especially younger people, that it's starting to seep into the consciousness.
I think it is pre-loved, you know, being really popular as well. So that's the other thing we'd say, you know, the combination of pre-loved and then the new, you know, the new things you buy, if you buy really little, but buy the best you can. I think, you know, we've definitely seen pre-loved as being massively driven by the younger generation, right? So I think that message is getting through. But slowly.
Now kind of everybody has to have pre-loved on the, like every brand, they don't have a choice. Like it has to be on their website or.
Yeah.
And which is awesome.
Which is awesome. But you know, what's really almost like funny is when you see the really, you know, mass market fast fashion brands who have also got pre-loved and you think, one, you're buying from in the first place. But secondly, your stuff is made so badly, you can't buy it pre-loved. It's already fallen apart by then.
What are you selling?
Like, quality, pre-loved stuff is actually about if you make quality stuff in the first place, right, then you can sell it on and sell it on and sell it on. And then it can have a really long life amongst many different people who can all enjoy it.
Are there any brands like that you're excited about, new up and coming that you're bringing in?
Oh,
I know you must love everybody who is on Immaculate Vegan as part of, because they have to kind of make the cut to be on there.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like,
we personally select every brand we try their products beforehand to make sure they really do, you know, pass the test. I mean, we're getting on some really exciting shoe brands, you know, from we've just had I really love this brand. They're Polish. They're called Agassi and they have some like gorgeous for fall, like chunky loafers, chunky flats, some really cool trainers, apple leather, grape leather, very kind of street style. So I really like them. One of my favorite brands is a French brand called Mimi Sur Terre. They ship globally and they're just about to get their new autumn winter collection on, which we should have on in about a week. And I've just had a sort of look at it and that looks amazing. Like the most beautiful winter boots and also proper winter coats, which is really hard to get nice winter coats that are vegan. So I'm very excited about that. We're trying to get more outerwear and knitwear on as well.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Because the one thing, the one area that I've had a hard time with since day one is wool. And yeah. Obviously I'm not going to wear wool, but the sweater thing is it's limited.
It is. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because on the leather side, actually, there are so many amazing alternative materials now, but I think there's nothing really that does the job of wool. You kind of got, on the one hand, you've got polyester, which you don't want because that's just a plastic. Well, certainly you don't want virgin polyester anyway. And then there are limited other alternatives. So there's nothing that really, I think, looks and feels like wool. I mean, what we take, my understanding is there is work being done in this area and there are materials that are being worked on, but they're not really commercially available yet. So what we tend to have is we have a lot of organic cotton, like the jumper I'm wearing now is chunky organic cotton, you know, which I love and which is, you know, it is actually really warm. It feels lovely. It just doesn't have that wool look. So I think that's the only thing. It's just not getting that wool look. And the same is true of coats, right? So we have lovely coats that are made out of, you know, either faux fur or, you know, puffer jackets that obviously don't have down in them. And, you know, all the different kind of styles, but there's nothing that's like that fine wool coat, right? That can
be
really elegant. Not yet. I've not seen anything yet. No, unfortunately.
I think there's people in the lab right now working on this stuff. I think it's coming. I think the like kind of wool sweater will probably be the last thing we see as vegans.
That's exactly it. But it's funny, isn't it? Because we've kind of got really good alternatives to leather and fur and silk. It's just wool that's the main one that we're not really seeing yet. But I think you're right. They're all being worked on. So hopefully watch the space.
Talk about homewares for a second, because I don't think most people think vegan homeware.
It's that wool thing again, you know, there are certain areas of homewares where animal products seep in. So one is things like cushions, you know, full of feather, but also the coverings, throws, you know, spreads, all that, you know, a lot of made from wool. So we have, that's kind of one area that we have, you know, a small but lovely collection there. Also candles, you know, candles are often made with beeswax or just really nasty chemicals. So we have a lovely natural range with a couple of brands who are selling, you know, beautiful either soy or rapeseed grown sustainably in the UK with lots of sustainable and natural fragrances as well. So it's mainly kind of those areas, but we also have, there's a sustainability angle as well, because we are all about sustainability too. So we have a lovely linen brand that has lots of really beautiful linen bedding, kitchen textiles. So it's primarily around textiles, I would say. But there's lots of areas we want to grow in there. And again, bring on US brands in that area too. And beauty is a combination. It's a combination of animal free, because again, there's lots of animal things that get into beauty, from, you know, goat's milk to, or just other lactose kind of products, for example, to fragrances, to dyes, but also just it's about having, you know, all natural, sustainable, ethically made products as well. So they're definitely areas you want to expand into.
A lot more people need to know about you, because once people are aware that beautiful things exist that don't create harm to the environment nor to animals, but they just don't know about them. That's your beauty. That's your magic right there.
And that's what we want to do. We just want to try and get to as many people and let them know that we exist, right? Because I think, a lot of people just don't really either know that we exist, but also just don't really think of the fact that there's this amazing vegan fashion out there that they can get involved in.
Well, Anique, thank you for putting it out there.
Thank you for your support and for being a fan right from the beginning. If anyone watching or listening would like to try us out, you can use the code IMMACULATE10, all one word, for a 10% discount as well for your first purchase.
To learn more about Anique and to learn more about Immaculate Vegan, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate.
I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, Olivia Deming, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.